So long as the complaints went no further than usurpation, however, the colonists were in the same dilemma we discussed earlier. The rights they complained about were alienable rights. So who was to say whether or not these rights were surrendered in a mythical social contract? One thing was certain. No revolution would ever get off the philosophic starting blocks in the midst of this confusion. If Jefferson was to justify revolution, he had to convict George III of violating not just any rights, but of violating inalienable rights. This was necessary for two reasons. First, there was no possible excuse for a systematic violation of inalienable rights. The argument quoted earlier from the loyalist Peter Van Schaack, which said Americans should give England the benefit of the doubt, might work with alienable rights, but not with inalienable rights. Neither the Parliament nor the King could deceive themselves into thinking that inalienable rights had somehow been surrendered by Americans in a social contract or by any other means. No, only one possible motive explained the repeated violation of inalienable rights: a deliberate plan to establish tyranny. Second, if the King could be proved guilty of violating inalienable rights, then the charge of tyranny, as defined by Locke, would stick. And when usurpation turns into tyranny, resistance can legitimately turn into revolution. When we focus on Jefferson's charge of tyranny against George III, and when we realize that tyranny was defined as the violation of inalienable rights, the Declaration of Independence appears as a systematic and tightly argued document. Listen to the second